This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Xenophobia was at an all-time high here in Malaysia in recent weeks after it was announced that 1.5 million Bangladeshi citizens were set to come to our shores to work. We explore today the vitriol that emerged towards our migrant workers with Datuk Ramachelva Manimuthu, the chairperson of the Bar Council's Migrants, Refugees and Immigration Affairs Committee, who will share stories of the difficulties faced by migrant workers here in Malaysia. Also joining us is Dr. Goh Chee Leong, psychologist, who will discuss his research in understanding the roots of intergroup prejudice and fear in the context of Malaysians' reaction to Bangladeshi workers. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Perhaps we can start off with an introduction of both your specialties. Dr. Goh, as a researcher, why is this issue close to your heart?
Well, I think it's key as our in terms of our development as a country. You know, to me, it's a reflection of our maturity as a society, how we treat guests in this country. You know, and I think a lot of the conversations we have, even about interracial relationships between people of different cultures, religions, I think is linked to this issue of how our attitudes are shaped towards people from other countries coming in. So I think it's an important conversation to have as a nation, in terms of how we are able to welcome, accept and celebrate diversity within our culture.
Dr. Ramak, tell us about the role and responsibilities of the Bar Council Committee on Migrants, Refugees and Immigration Affairs.
Lynn, the Bar Council has been involved in human rights issues for a very, very long time. About a decade ago, the Bar Council felt the need that there needs to be a specialized committee that looks into the matters affecting migrants, refugees, and refugees in our country. Because the numbers have grown big. We've seen unprecedented numbers of migrants. We've also seen unprecedented numbers of refugees in our country. So they face grave challenges whilst they are here, and whilst they go back as well after working here and so on. So we felt that there needs to be a special committee that looks after the issues affecting migrants and refugees. So that is why this committee was set up. And it works closely with both these communities.
What kind of work do you do exactly? What kind of services do you provide?
We provide legal representation for migrants and refugees. For those who face specific cases. We also do a broad range of advocacy work. We've come out with a whole host of memorandums and policy briefs pertaining to migrants and refugees, asking the government and state actors to bring about changes in law. We also look into very deeply into the issue of access to justice and also the social and welfare issues facing migrants and refugees in our country.
Once this sort of huge news broke about the 1.5 million Bangladeshi citizens and all these reactions started emerging both in social media and the media, what were your thoughts about some of those reactions?
When this matter came up sometime last year, when government proposed that 1.5 million Bangladeshis be taken, the bar was very concerned about this large influx that would come in because basically due to the numbers and the need for such huge numbers of migrant workers. You see, right now as it stands, there are about 2.2 million documented migrant workers. According to some, the Home Minister, there are something like another 2.2 million undocumented. According to the Human Resource Minister, it's something like 4.8 million undocumented. So if you have a number of at least 2.2 to 4.8 million undocumented workers in Malaysia, our view is, first and foremost, you should provide a legal path for documentation for these undocumented workers before you bring in further migrant workers, firstly. Secondly, there has been great opposition from the trade union movement. There has been opposition from the employer groups as well, the two key sectors involved in bringing in migrant labour to Malaysia. So we are of the view that when these two key components, or the only components really, as far as the labor force is concerned, is against it, why is the state wanting to go ahead with this? So we support the call that there be a moratorium on bringing in these migrant workers until there's a needs-based assessment done. That is the position of the bar.
Dr. Goh, when you read, you know, some of the things that people were saying about the possibility of this influx of migrant workers from Bangladesh, what were your thoughts? Because some of those reactions were violent and, you know, some might say xenophobic, to say the least.
Yeah, no, I think it is troubling. I mean, we must say, though, that certainly it doesn't reflect all of Malaysians' views. You know, so I think in many different countries where you see similar kinds of reactions to foreigners coming in, I mean, you have to understand that there are always two camps and two groups. So fortunately for us, not everybody is a xenophobe, not everybody is a racist. But I think it's troubling enough because it certainly reflects a segment of society that does feel very strongly, you know, about this issue and reflects, I would say, very racist, prejudiced attitudes, you know, towards people from certain countries.
Having said that, we do see this trend of xenophobia in many countries. We're not alone in this, where hostility is directed towards immigrants, refugees, minority populations, you know, just anything that you regard as different from yourself. Mm-hmm. Is this behavior universal?
I think certainly it is common in many different cultures because social psychology tells us that, I mean, on one level, a natural reaction because people don't understand, you know, people of different cultures. And often we are threatened by people who are different, people, you know, that we don't understand, you know. But having said that, I must say, I mean, the fact that it is common and that we see it in other countries is not an excuse. You know, and I think what's happening in many countries, whether it's in the West or the East or here in Malaysia, is the fact that, like I say, that there is a national conversation about, you know, how our attitudes should be towards people of you know, different cultures and religions and, you know, countries. And I think the challenge is that where these debates are happening, you know, we need to be on the side of, you know, understanding and tolerance and celebration of differences. You know, and I think there are countries where you see the right side winning the debate, you know, and you see that there is a swing over time in terms of public perception and understanding. So I think, yeah, the fact is, yes, you know, in many parts of the world, you see these reactions, certainly in Europe right now, you know, with the Syrian migration, you see these, you know, uprising of xenophobia. But it doesn't mean that the battle, you know, can't be won in the hearts and minds of people.
What would you say are the factors that contribute towards the blossoming of xenophobia? Because I would think that certain things like, you know, it occur like an influx of people occurring during an economic downturn, for instance, those are situations where people are perhaps already under stress, perhaps already feeling like there's not enough to go around. You know, what are the factors that contribute towards it becoming worse than it has to be?
Well, social psychology identifies a few things. I mean, you've mentioned one of them. I mean, it's linked to something called the realistic competition theory, which is when the pie is not big enough for everybody and there's an economic crunch, then immediately people start to, you know, look at differences. And look, don't even talk about foreigners. This happens even within different races in a particular country. You know, so when there's an economic crunch, immediately the differences become more apparent because we need somebody to blame, you know. That's one theory, you know. I think different people have different roots of xenophobia. So another we've talked about earlier is just the fact that I don't understand these people. They are different, they are weird, they don't eat the way we do, they don't talk the way we do, the language is different, you know. And so I'm sure many of us have heard friends, you know, commenting that, oh, when I go to KL town on Saturday, Sunday, I don't feel like I'm in Malaysia anymore. You know, I feel that, oh, the foreigners have taken over. And I think these kind of comments also reflect this sense of I'm at ease with the way the city is changing because of these people coming in, you know. And so it could be just unease with change, you know, I'm conservative, I want things to remain the same. It could be sharing of economic pie. So I think there are a few different factors at play.
We're speaking today with Dr. Goh Chee Leong, psychologist, and Datuk Ramachelva Manimuthu, chairperson of the Bar Council Migrants, Refugees and Immigration Affairs Committee. And we're discussing xenophobia in Malaysia in light of the news regarding 1.5 million Bangladeshi citizens who are set to come here to work. If you have got any questions on xenophobia or about the migrant situation, do give us a call. That number is 03-77-109-000. You can also text us at 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me, Datuk Ramachelva Manimuthu, chairperson of the Bar Council Migrants, Refugees and Immigration Affairs Committee, as well as Dr. Goh Chee Leong, psychologist. And we're discussing xenophobia in Malaysia. If you have got a call for us, do ring us at 03-77-109-000. You can also text us at 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Dr. Goh, is there a difference between racism and xenophobia?
I think there is a slight difference, even though, I mean, a lot of the manifestations are the same. You know, I mean, racism could apply to your own countrymen, you know, so people of different races. Well, I think when we talk about xenophobia, we're talking about foreigners. But both of them are common in a sense that it is a form of prejudice. It's a form of fear in terms of people who are different from us.
And it's often disguised also as patriotism or nationalism. You know, it's this whole thing of, well, like, I don't want my country to be like any number of different ways because of any number of different people. Do all these tap on similar emotions within us? Can patriotism sometimes kind of morph into xenophobia?
Yeah, no, I think all of us have seen that while patriotism in general is something to be lauded, you know, and encouraged, there are examples of ugly forms of patriotism that can turn destructive. And look, you know, we are proud of Malaysia. I'm proud to be a Malaysian, but I also need to embrace the fact that I'm a global citizen. And the nature of globalization means that there's movement between countries. And to put it this way, you know, I mean, the reality is that we need people from different countries to come and work in a variety of sectors. You know, whether they be working professionals or doing very menial jobs, the reality is Malaysia needs these people for the economy to move on. And I used the analogy with my students when I was lecturing with them that it's like, you know, if I feel that I need a maid in the house, you know, and the practical implications are this person needs to be there to help me with my job, then I need to embrace the fact that this is another human being sharing my home. And I need to treat this person with respect and dignity. And if I'm not willing to have this person share my space, then I need to do the work myself, you know. And I think the reality is we have found that we do depend to a large extent on foreign migrant work. And therefore, as a country, we need to embrace the reality that comes with that, which is you can't bring people into work and not treat them like human beings and not be willing to share the space and the country with them, because they are, like it or not, they're helping us build our country.
We have a phone call here from Lee. Good afternoon, Lee.
Good afternoon.
Hi, have you got a question?
Oh, yes. Actually, since you're speaking about xenophobia, I was wondering that, you know, discrimination, it does not have, it's not just we discriminate because of, purely for the sake of discrimination. There's actually hard facts. For example, in Germany, in the New Year festival or something, there was a huge number of theft, rape and all that because of the migrants, and this causes the xenophobia to actually happen. So do you have any comments on this?
I mean, my comment would be this. I think any society, any culture, any country has the right to set certain boundaries and rules in terms of what is acceptable behavior. But I think the difference between then saying, look, there's a law that needs to be followed, and anybody who breaks the law, whether you're a foreigner or a local, need to then be subject to the consequences of the law. Now, that's different from then saying, because, you know, some foreigners have committed a crime, therefore all foreigners are like that. And I think, you know, the issue with prejudice and racism is I'm no longer judging people on their individual behavior. I'm judging them, I'm painting all of the group with the same brush because of one experience. So, I mean, it's not just foreigners. It could apply to any of the races, Malay, Chinese, Indian, you know. So we call these stereotypes, you know. So we say all Chinese are like this, all Malays are like this, all people from Bangladesh are like this. So I think I agree that any culture, you know, has the right to defend its culture, and if you break the law, then yes, we should deport, action should be taken. But that's different from saying that all of the criminals are foreigners. And I think one of the stats that stands out is in Malaysia, a lot of people tend to think that a lot of the crimes are committed by foreigners. But every statistic shows that the overwhelming majority of crimes, whether they be, you know, murder, rape, you know, theft, are actually committed by Malaysians. So I think I agree, you know, we need to be sensible about, you know, who we bring in, and they are, everybody is subject to the same laws. But that's different from, I think, playing double standards, you know, and painting all foreigners with the same brush.
Okay.
Thanks for the call, Lee.
Okay.
We're speaking about xenophobia today. If you have got any questions about that or about a possible influx of migrant workers or refugees, give us a call. That number is 03-7710-9000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Dato, you talked earlier about making sure that you provide sufficient legal counsel, you know, legal services for migrants and refugees. Would you say that by and large migrants have sufficient legal protection, or that they understand their rights within our legal system and country?
Sadly, that is one of the big issues facing migrants in Malaysia. Many of them come extremely ill-prepared. They are not given sufficient training about how our society works, much so the legal system. So what the bar does is the bar works with the various community groups of the migrants. It works with the various missions of the source countries to tell them about the various laws in our country, the legal system in our country. The bar further goes on to assist migrants through our legal aid centres. We have a national legal aid scheme which provides legal assistance to everyone, Malaysians as well as migrants. And they do avail of the assistance offered by the bar. But again, our resources are limited. So if you talk about access to justice issues, knowledge is one thing. Some of them may have the knowledge. But access to justice is definitely a huge challenge in Malaysia.
In your experience, is xenophobia something that can or should be criminalized?
Of course, I think xenophobia should be criminalized. It has been criminalized in some countries in the West. It's what's commonly called as a hate crime. Hatred of foreigners, it's a hate crime. In fact, there was a proposal in our National Harmony Bills that was proposed by the committee set up to make hate crime a crime. However, those bills have not moved forward. It is time for us as Malaysians to revisit that set of bills, which is commonly referred to as the Harmony Bills. And it's time we seriously look into this issue. Hatred has got no place in any society, in any civilized nation.
If we look at, if we go back to some of the reactions that happened, some of the statements issued by individuals and organizations bordered on hate speech. You know, we're talking about hate crimes before, but could legal action be taken there, you know, about people who say sweeping things like, oh, you know, they come here and they're responsible for rapes, they bring disease, things like that?
What we could do is, of course, criticize them, take on what is called the bully pulpit, to tell them that they are wrong, even if it is not a crime as it is now. This type of sweeping statements, generalization, should be condemned. But unfortunately, our leaders do not seem to be taking the bully pulpit against these people who make all these hate speeches, so to speak. And these people get airtime and they get along, you know, free publicity and so on and so forth. And they are playing to that base, you know, instincts of people. It's like a la Donald Trump is doing these days to Mexicans, Muslims and all kinds of minorities. You know, and our people do the same thing, and they should be condemned and vilified by civil society, by the media, and so on and so forth. Instead, you know, you have people who then go and echo the sentiments, including people of in leadership. You know, and you have also, again, people on both sides of the political divide making all kinds of generalizations. You saw at the last general elections, there was a speech from one side of the political divide saying there are 40,000 Bangladeshis coming in going to vote to change the elections. These are types of things that's unacceptable behavior. You know, you condemn an entire community, an entire nation, saying that they are coming here to subvert the political process. And that creates a lot of distrust, you know, anger and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So you stereotype, you perpetuate the stereotypes, you know, and so people in leadership must behave responsibly. That is what is important.
No, I mean, I think in a mature democracy, this debate needs to be encouraged. I agree with Datuk, you know, I mean, I'm not in favour of banning people voicing opinions and concerns, because some of them voice opinions out of ignorance. Yes, yes. You know, but I think the remedy to that is not to ban, put them in jail. You know, the remedy is to say, let's have a debate, you know, and let's look at the facts. And because I think in the end of the day, we believe we are on the right side of the facts. You know, that when you look at the facts and the logic, and there's a greater understanding of the situation in its proper perspective, we believe most right-thinking people will realize, you know, what is the right way to go. And I think it's also an appeal to our culture. I mean, as Asians, we value all kinds of things. We talk about teaching our children respect.
Good manners. You know,
sensitivity, yes, good manners, true. Being nice to guests. So I think, again, it's not about changing our culture. In fact, it's actually an appeal to our Asian culture of respect, love, care, compassion.
We're talking about xenophobia today. If you've got any questions about that, if you'd like to voice your opinions about the influx of migrant workers that we might soon be seeing, give us a call. That number is 0377109000. You can also text 0162019000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Dr. Goh, it's interesting that you bring up facts, I think, because we often feel like, I think logical people feel like, well, you can win arguments with facts. If you can't win arguments with facts, what can you win them with? Having said that, though, as you pointed out earlier, there is no correlation between immigration and crime in Malaysia. You know, the facts clearly support that. But why does this mistrust persist, despite the fact that overwhelmingly the facts are in favour of that argument?
But there is a phenomena in psychology called illusory correlations, you know, and psychologists use this to explain why, in spite of sometimes confronting people with the facts, there are a lot of people in the whole world who still retain very racist or xenophobic attitudes. And the way it works is, you know, so put it this way. I mean, let's say over the last 2 months, I've got 100 encounters with people of a certain race, you know, not of my own. And out of that 100 encounters, 20% of the encounters were negative, 80% were positive. And what this phenomena says is I tend to only remember the 20% that confirm the fact that there you go, you know, these people are like that. They are criminals, they are violent, you know, and conveniently ignoring the 80%. And what's interesting is when it comes to my own race, so when I talk about Malaysian Chinese or Malaysians, the number could be the same, but then I remember the 80% of positive and not the negative. So I think, you know, this is one way of explaining why some people persist, even though you confront them with experiences and actual encounters with different races, why some of them still hold some of these beliefs. But look, having said that, we shouldn't be discouraged. In the end of the day, these debates should still be happening in coffee shops around Malaysia. I mean, one of the reasons why I was keen on coming to radio is to encourage more people to have these debates. And people who hold views of tolerance and respect need to speak up. You know, as Datuk said, they can't be silent. We need more leaders, role models, and when I say leaders, at all levels of society, leaders in our families, in our communities, in our schools, in our companies, in our country, to speak up, you know, because I hope I'm right, that most Malaysians are decent people. And when you appeal to basic decency, you know, they understand the issue.
Local blogger Wan Muhammad Azri Wanderis, or Papagomo as he's known, made headlines recently over a video of him assaulting a foreign worker who allegedly harassed his two sisters and their friends. Datuk, would actions such as these fall within the purview of hate crimes?
It would be a crime, of course, taking the law into your hands.
Self-help yes.
cannot be tolerated. You know, and obviously he's got no... what do you call, defense, you know, of self-defense or so on and so forth. So it would be a crime under any standard or any yardstick, you see. Whether it would be hate crime or something, it's difficult to say on that context. But I would definitely say it's a crime.
With that said, though, many people did laud him for his actions, you know, for standing up for Malaysians, for standing up for his family. Do you think such behaviour fuels others to do the same? You know, does it, if it's not sufficiently sort of prosecuted, if it's not pursued?
I believe that there must be serious investigation into the matter. After due investigation, prosecution should take place. Obviously, we do not encourage vigilante justice in our criminal justice system. It is, or in any criminal justice system. So his actions must be condemned. I hope the police do carry out their investigations speedily and bring him to the book. That is what's required. It is not only in respect of migrants. It is also for in respect of locals. Even if he beats up a migrant or a local, it will make no difference because you cannot take the law into your hands.
Dr. Goh, does xenophobia encourage violence? Is there a link there between that feeling of fearing someone else and then, as Datuk says, taking matters into your own hands?
It can, but not always. You know, I think xenophobia is a prejudice, is an attitude. So that's the way I feel, I think about somebody. Now, of course, how I choose to act that out, you know, it may be not just through violence, it may be in the way I employ people, promote people, treat people, talk to people. So certainly, yes, the link can be there, but I think we need to understand that just because violence may not take place in a particular context doesn't necessarily mean there's no prejudice, because I think the prejudice comes out in a lot of different ways. I mean, earlier on, I mentioned the examples of mates, you know, a lot of families have domestic mates, and when you know, investigate how some of them are treated, you know, talked to, you know, even allowing some of our children the way they talk to their mates, I think reflect this sense of prejudice. I mean, the psychological term is contemptuous prejudice, meaning you look down on this particular group of people because they are from a country or because they are a certain gender or because they are from a certain race.
On that note, Datuk, one expression of xenophobia that's increasingly blatant is the discrimination by landlords towards prospective tenants, you know, based on race, based on nationality. You have people saying, you know, I will not accept someone from a certain country, or I prefer someone from a certain race. Is this practice legal? Can people say that?
I would definitely condemn this practice. I would say there is nothing in the law so far that
prevents you
from doing it. It is, but I think we should come out with guidelines or at least local council bylaws or something that outlaws this type of behavior. You know, you've come across, we've got some tolerance, I mean, for this type of discriminatory practices over people saying, I don't want people of X race, even among Malaysian ethnic groups as their tenants. Mm-hmm. Advertisements comes out in newspapers. Mm-hmm. They want tenants or housemates of race X, Y, Z, or so on and so forth. This should not be tolerated, you know, and I surely condemn this. The bar condemns this. We hope that laws are made to make this type of conduct illegal.
Also, not too long ago, an image which supposedly showed a Bangladeshi's worker payslip made the rounds online. It showed that his monthly salary exceeded 5,000 ringgit thanks to overtime work. He was supposedly employed by KLIA. Based on your work with migrant workers, how plausible is a salary like that? You know, are our migrant workers paid overtime?
Can I just take it, bring you to context on one issue? I think one of the greatest things that the government has done today is to bring about this minimum wage regulations. It has helped Malaysians, it has helped migrants. Before, migrants were paid something like 300, 400 as basic wages, and they work a full 12 hours and get 800 ringgit. With this minimum wage in play, they are now paid 900. And if they do decent hours of overtime, they do get 1,008, 2,000 ringgit. And if his basic wage is higher than the minimum wage, if one gets a basic wage of 3,000, for instance, one could easily earn 5,000. So it depends on what is the person's basic wage.
And it also depends on how much work he or she is doing.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Because, yeah, I mean, presumably, if we're talking about that basic being relatively high, we still are talking about a lot of overtime in order to hit that amount, I presume.
Yeah, you if you take a basic of 2.5, on the average, if you do a 4-hour overtime, which and you work on a Sunday, then you could hit the 5,000. I mean, let's face it. I mean, we have this. The people we are talking about are basically the low menial workers. But you have this other category of migrant workers who are the expatriate category who work, who earn much, much, much higher.
Yeah.
You know, so, but this person could be a mid-level supervisor or whatever. Mm. But just on that, if it was just a 900 ringgit basic wage, surely he could not make the 5,000. He could have easily made 1,008.
I mean, I think the fact that there's an uproar, to me, that's racist, you know?
Yes.
Because,
yes,
I mean, if this person was from a Western country or America or, you know, Korea or China, I mean, would anybody be raising an issue of somebody earning 5,000?
So you might consider that a low pay.
It would be.
So that's the issue, you see. You know, the idea here, you know, I think what we are after is a world where people are judged on merit, people are judged on what they can do and perform, you know, rather than a workplace where we have double standards because of the color of the skin or which country you come from. So I think it comes back to the core of the argument and the debate, which is xenophobia tends to be targeted at certain countries only. And there are other communities that Malaysians are more than happy to invite in. And in fact, you know, we put above our own, you know. And I think that's the issue. So that's why there is a racist element to what's happening.
And just to expand on that, I've always got this interesting thing to say about how law enforcement carries out its duties. If you go to Bangsa or Changkat, you see people from the Western countries hogging all over the pubs and everything else. You don't see any RELA or law enforcement official disturbing them. But if you go to, say, Chowkit or whatever, they pick on every other guy to check his IDs and so on and so forth. It just shows the mindset of how our law enforcement, how our people perceive people of different nationalities.
And once you enter, or once you get into any form of legal trouble, I think it's very difficult, because we did speak to Parti Socialist Malaysia's Rani Rasia last week, and she stressed how migrant workers in Malaysia do not have the right to redress. You know, for all basic intents and purposes, it's not something they have. Dato, would you know if steps are being taken to address this?
Okay, let me put it this way. It is not that they do not have the right to redress. I believe the laws are there. The right to redress is there. I think the issue is the access to the right to redress. If you look at the various components of law, for instance, the civil justice system, you have, as far as migrants are concerned, the purely civil cases, and you have a large chunk of cases that would be deemed as cases under labor laws, violations of rights and so on and so forth. So in those areas, the law really allows you to make a claim, at least for documented workers. I'll come to undocumented workers in a moment. But the point is, they once they have a dispute, they go to the labor courts, for instance. It takes quite some time for them to, you know, get their case over and done with.
During which time they cannot work.
They cannot work. They have to take a special pass, which will cost them 100 ringgit, that does not give them the right to work. So that actually makes it an impossibility for them to secure justice. So what the bar has asked, in fact, one of the first memorandums we sent to the government 10 years ago, 9 years ago, was this, saying that if the person has a dispute, let him continue staying in Malaysia. Let him secure an alternative place of employment. Let him change employees because he's got a dispute with the present employer. That policy is not in place yet. We hope government seriously considers that. Secondly, we have this other issue facing undocumented workers. They cannot access the justice system at all because they are not documented. So we should take a more flexible approach in those cases, because if you can prove employment-employee relationship, then you should have the right to redress. Your violations of your criminal, your immigration status is a separate matter. Then I come to another serious area. In the criminal justice system, Dr. Goh is perfectly right. We have statistics from the police who say that only 2% of crimes are committed by migrants, who form a very large proportion of the Malaysian population, anywhere between 5 to 7 million right now. Okay. But if you see the prison population, the remand population, they're in a disproportionate number. Huge, 40% or so. So you basically, most of them cannot secure bail, and the immigration detentions are full of them. You see, what happens is most of them cannot afford lawyers. From our experience, only certain missions, like for instance the Indonesian embassy, the Indian High Commission, provide some legal assistance in criminal cases, but that again is for high profile cases, which is very minuscule, one in 200,000 maybe, you know. What we are proposing, and what we have proposed to the government or the chambers, is this. We right now have the National Legal Aid Foundation scheme in place. It is a scheme run with a grant from the government, with the Attorney General as the chair, the President of the Bar as the deputy chair. It's run by lawyers on a very minimum fee scale. We are asking that this scheme, which provides free legal assistance in criminal cases, be extended to all migrants in Malaysia. And again, the other issue is you have to make sure that the rights of undocumented migrants is not violated as well. So it is imperative that for them to have access to justice, that they come out of the shadows and they be allowed to be legalized. Government has started the step. We hope that that would be carried forward in a comprehensive and fair manner.
Finally, because we're running out of time, unfortunately, to put it, you know, to kind of close it off, how can we reduce and prevent prejudice?
I think there are a lot of practical things we can do. You know, I think the key to me is conscientizing the public about this issue. And I think we need leaders in all spheres. You know, I think we need journalists and politicians and leaders talking more about the issue, because, like I say, I suspect the majority of Malaysians honestly don't understand the issue. A lot of the things Dato' is talking about, you know, the difficulties, the prejudice, the discrimination they experience, they have no idea, you know, I mean, even though they're living at their doorstep. So I think the new generation of Malaysians need to be educated about the plight of migrant workers, because, like I say, they are part of our society. They may not be citizens, but they're part of our country. So, you know, we talk about Ola Bola, you know, I mean, one film can create a national conversation. And we laud that. I mean, that's fantastic. Everybody's talking about unity and football in the 80s. You know, I mean, I would like filmmakers to start making documentaries and films about migrant workers' experiences in Malaysia. You know, and people writing about it. And for these countries, you know, to be taught in school. I mean, we know more about the West than about a country like Bangladesh, India, Nepal, you know. And yet, as Dato' said, 5-7 million of these people are here. Most of our children understand nothing about their culture, music, stories, heroes, history. You know, so I mean, I think conscientizing, educating the public and encouraging these debates is part of the process.
Dato?
You see, one of the things is, I think it is important for us to inform Malaysians about the positive effects that migration brings. As Dr. Goh has correctly pointed out, migrants contribute a lot to our national economy. I think economists, I just heard your news just now, where the World Bank actually says that migrants have actually contributed a lot to our national economy. So it is important for us to recognize the contributions of migrants to our society, to us individually as human beings. And one of the important things is, let's not highlight only the thing about, oh, migrants send back 20 billion ringgit. What about the so many much more billions over the 20 billion that we have earned firstly. Secondly, I think it is important for us to portray the positiveness of migration. There is a campaign being carried out by ILO called Migration Works that shows migration in a positive light. It is important. Ultimately, I think what is important for us all to remember, migrants are not commodities. They are human beings. Mm. And they should be treated with dignity that every human being deserves. Mm. And finally, every society, every civilization will be judged by how we treat the most vulnerable in our community. And the migrants are a vulnerable community. So if we condemn and ill-treat them, that does not speak well of us.
Thank you both very much for coming in today. I've been speaking with Dato' Ramachelvan Manimuthu, Chairperson of the Bar Council Migrants, Refugees and Immigration Affairs Committee, as well as Dr. Goh Chee Leong, psychologist, and we've been discussing xenophobia in Malaysia. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.